Blog Talk Radio.
I say it every week, folks. I say it every week. Usually, something midweek happens that sets me off. It's natural. I guess being the personality that I am, it's natural that something would set me off. And I guess it's akin to the Power Alley, and I guess it's akin to the fact that, of course, I have a good soundboard mechanism, you know, every single week. And, of course, I'm talking about Bo Reed, Let's Talk Rangers, who finally decided to call. I'm just messing with you, Bo. It happens every week. Naturally, Bo, it happens every week. Something sets me off. And, of course, this week it's something small. It's the dreaded change of scenery conversation when it comes to a struggling ball player. And of course, you're privy to struggling ball players down in Texas. I'm sorry for the jab. Of course, I'm gonna start the show off by taking pot shots at the Texas Rangers. Happens every single week. Will happen every single week. And as far as we do the show, I'm going to do that. But the thing about this is, Bo, the change of scenery makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, because the problem will still happen regardless of where that player goes. And, of course, I'm talking about Dustin Ackley up here in Seattle, the guy at the number two overall pick back in 2009, second behind Steven Strasburg, was supposed to come into this and you know, be that next, I guess you can say, consistent performer. And now 4.5 years into his big league career, he's been basically nothing. He's basically the equivalent of a guy who couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. And, of course, this week, Bo, you know, it's the dreaded change of scenery. And, of course, I'm quick to say it, regardless of whether he's in Seattle, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, or even in AAA Tacoma, his swing is still a swing, and that will never change until they actually change it. He's going to be the same Dustin Ackley. Okay, rant over. Welcome to the Power Alley. Every week, Steve Silver, me, Bo Reed, him, joins you. Talk a little bit about Major League Baseball. This week is no different, except of a few little things that we're going to blend into the show. This week we are going to be giving you our players of the week, a highlight of a couple players that we feel stood above the rest, and it could be somebody from Bo's Texas Rangers, it could be from my Seattle Mariners, or it could be just any random player out there who we felt had a very good week. We're also going to be putting somebody in the box this week, and what I mean by that is, well, we're going to put them in the batter's box this week, and it could be a player, it can be a team, it can be a group of teams, it can be a division, it can be Bo's Texas Rangers, it can be my Seattle Mariners, it can be your Cincinnati Reds, it doesn't matter. We're going to put somebody in the box, we're going to tell you if they're performing well, or if they're struggling, on the verge of breaking out. We will definitely do that. So definitely look forward to that. And, of course, later in the show, we'll be giving you some news and notes. But until that time, back to my rant. Of course, Bo, it's interesting how prospects work. It's interesting how the prospect game has basically changed from basically 20 years ago to the way it is now. Where 20 years ago, don't get me wrong, in a specific instance, maybe certain guys were fast-tracked to the major leagues, but still, they were given at least 1,000 minor league at-bats, so we're basically the equivalent of a full year. Now, whether that's split up between, you know, being drafted, right? You know, back in the day, they used to be drafted in the College World Series. So whether it's, you know, a month and a half worth of pro at-bats when you first get drafted to the end of the short A season, and then, you know, spending the very next year in various levels, and then being called up the very next year after that, they were at least given one full year in the minor leagues to go through the systems, to see different pitching, to really work on some things. And if there was something that they needed to work on, they were giving extra time before being ultimately brought up to the major leagues, unless it was deemed that he was ready to do it. But not today, Bo. If you are basically a pick within the first five rounds, if you're a compensatory pick between the first and the second round, whatever the case may be, you are expected to not only step into step into pro ball, perform, get to the big leagues quick, but once you're there, you're expected to perform. And if not, well, just ask Dustin Ackley now. It looks like he is on the way out, one foot out the door, Bo. It's interesting how this prospect game works now, but again, it's just a vicious circle. It is a system now that is basically chewing up and spitting out kids. It's basically a what have you done for me lately type of system now. But again, when you're a team competing for a World Series, trying to get to a World Series, unfortunately, that's just the way it has to be.
Sure. I mean, I get it. I understand. I mean, you guys are having some offensive issues up there in Seattle, and your rant about Ackley have become a daily occurrence on social media. So I knew something was going on there, and I was really surprised that rant of yours was so short and kind of like
it's about to get started back up again. I don't know if you're like kind of like you're trying to poke me with a stick. I don't know if that's what you're trying to do, but here's what I will say. The problem with Dustin Ackley is
a shot. It's fair.
that's true. It's true. I guess everything is fair. The thing about Ackley, Bo, he can't cover the entire plate because of his swing. He cannot cover the entire plate, which means once, possibly even twice in an at bat, he's going to give away strikes while that running two seamer or sinker low and away. And because of the expanded strike zone that some of these umps have, you know, he's giving away strikes because, well, quite frankly, he can't handle that pitch. He can't even get to that pitch. So he's basically forced to work counts. But the problem is once he works a count to his favor and gets that fastball, he either lets it go or he turns over and grounds into a double play, as we've seen the last couple nights, especially with runners in scoring position. The guy looks completely lost. You know, not to peel from Crash Davis, Bo. You know, the ever famous Crash Davis. He couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat.
Well, you know, you did keep it family oriented, and I give the actual quote that Crash Davis used.
That's true.
He kept it family.
It almost begs to ask this question. Is it okay to give a prospect an extra year? And I understand that. You know, you have a couple nice prospects down in the Texas Ranger organization. Now, thankfully, they're being blocked by a couple guys. But, I mean, if the case was they weren't being blocked by a guy, say, like Adrian Beltre, and, of course, I'm talking about Joey Gallo, or, you know, behind the plate with a follow, you know, mm-hmm. If they weren't being blocked at the big leagues, chances are there would be some pressure to get those guys up in the big leagues as quick as they can. And it's a little bit of a different situation because the Mariners over the last couple of years have been really terrible. So you've seen fast-tracking rush draws. Mike Zunino got up because they basically didn't have a catcher. And of course, Dustin Ackley did come up in a pretty expedited time. Same with Kyle Seager. It's funny to me, and I ask the question because is it okay to not give in to the pressure? Is it okay to say, you know what? Listen, maybe a couple more months might do this kid good. Yeah, it looks like he might be ready. But maybe a couple more months in AAA, get them just a couple more at-bats, get them ready to go, and just kind of resist the temptation of buying in, you know, to what the media is telling you what you need to do, maybe what your fan base is driving you to do, and just do what's right for the player for the first time. Is that okay? Or is it now just a situation where we have to win now?
Well, okay, there's a couple things here. One, I mean, you got to be careful with prospects. I mean, you guys know probably just as much as Rangers fans know what happened to Justin Smoke. He was rushed. And he was rushed because Chris Davis stopped hitting. And Mitch Moreland stopped hitting. So they bring up Justin Smoke. He wasn't ready. And it really hurt that kid. You know, I mean, we're still pulling for him. At least I am. Pulling for him to come out of this. But that really hurt that kid. And I think what you have to look at, too, you have to look at the American League West standings a little bit differently than we normally would. You know, you got the front-runner Astros. They're like five games up on second place Anaheim, but everybody else is within a game or two. It's not time to panic yet. Because I think we can both agree the Astros are eventually going to come back to that pack. They're going to come back to the pack. I mean, because they're a good team. They're getting better, but they're not that good yet. They're still about a year away from that. They're going to come back to the pack. The main thing you have to look at is that pulling away from each other.
Sure.
There's no reason to panic at this point.
I'm certainly not saying that, you know, in terms of, you know, play this year, I mean, you know, Dustin Ackley has been what he's been for basically the – give or take the last 3 years. He's basically been
sure.
everything that it's been. And I don't think it's a confidence issue. I don't think it's because he, you know, whether or not he likes the game of baseball or whether he wants to play the game of baseball. What's kind of funny is, you know, I heard just a couple days ago that, you know, the difference between him and Kyle Seager, Kyle Seager got up and you saw exactly what he's done to transform him into now a $100 million player. He got the extension this offseason, 7 years, $100 million, which is actually quite a bargain. But what's kind of funny is when you saw the maturation process of him, where he came up and he was an extreme pole hitter, and, you know his numbers versus left-handed pitching was absolutely horrible. And so what did he do? He developed a way to utilize that as an asset. And then when the shift got put on, he put down a bunt. Or when people say, when people say that maybe his midsection, you know, was just a little too slender and he wasn't going to be able to, you know, add enough weight to the torque of the swing, then all of a sudden he comes back, you know, at the beginning of last year, and all of a sudden he looks like he spent the entire off season, you know, in a weight room. Whereas Dustin Ackley, him and his wife would, you know, disappear into Michigan, not be heard for a couple months, and you had questioned, you know, it was questioned whether or not maybe his motive. I don't necessarily buy that. You know, all the dealings that I've had with Dustin Bowe, it sounded like he does love the game of baseball, and he truly is committed to the game of baseball, but he is just what he is, you know what I mean? This is the way that he plays, and so I guess if there's anything that I have to say about the want-to is whether it's between his head, whether he's committed to trying to figure out a way to get ahead of the curve. But outside of that, I mean, this is just the way that he plays, and what's kind of funny is, it's not mental to me as it is just the swing. He's got to correct it. That's the one thing. But I guess the question is, at this point, since he's already been in the league since June of 2012, I think it's like, what, 4.5 years, does that kill his career? Does that kill his career if he says, okay, I got to go back to the drawing board and reinvent this swing? You know what I mean? I basically got to tell the organization, listen, man, I got to reinvent my swing. I got to swallow my pride here, reinvent my swing. Maybe it takes a full year down in Tacoma. You know, and just maybe to really get that swing back. But does that kill his career, or at least kill his Mariner career? Because that, you understand how this works. If you voluntarily go down to do that, they got to bring somebody either in from outside the organization or in up from Tacoma. And at that point, what happens then? You end up losing your spot if somebody performs. So I mean, essentially, it might kill one, but it might, you know, you get what I'm saying though.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and you know, I think that. We talk about Ackley, we're not talking about a power hitter. So this is a guy that has to live and die in the gaps. He has to live and die hitting them where they ain't, so to speak, and he's not doing that. Maybe
he's definitely hitting them where they are.
Exactly. Yeah. So maybe he needs that. Maybe he needs to go down. I don't think it'll kill his career. It'll certainly put on life support. I mean, the best he's going to do, he'll get a release from the Mariners at some point soon, maybe even after this year, unless he just turns it on down in Tacoma. He's going to get a release from the Mariners. He's going to sign a minor league contract and have to earn his way on. And we've seen lately this influx of younger players with all these teams. Even contenders have an influx of younger players coming up. So that makes it even harder for him to crack those major league rosters unless he just tears us.
Right.
No, that you can't. I understand. You know, you want to go with a hot hand. I get that. But at the same time, I mean, Elvis Andres hit 400 this spring and has been horrible this year at the plate.
Right.
You can't judge a spring based off the batting average. You have to go by what you see, and you have to go by track record. Right now, his track record is not good. So,
you're right about the spring, because this spring he didn't really look all that good either. And the reason why we're talking about this is because right now the Seattle Mariners, and there's no doubt the Seattle Mariners have talent, but they're not necessarily playing to exactly what their roster says their talent should be playing at. Right now they're, you know, it was nice because they finally, you know, they come off that 4-game sweep at Houston, which was as ridiculous as that was. They sweep the A's, which was nice because they needed to get on some type of momentum and get on a nice little roll. They take the first game from San Diego. They cough away a win in the second game. And last night, again, multiple opportunities. And this has basically been the Seattle Mariners up to this point. And you understand this because it's almost been a carbon copy with the Texas Rangers.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Minus the injuries, obviously, where you know there's talent. And you know exactly what the ceiling should be at, but yet this team figures out a way to play itself out of ballgames. Now, whether it's a Lloyd McClendon issue, whether it's a Jeff Banister issue, it's, you know, maybe they're being a little too cute. But what's interesting about it, when you see when you see, especially just 2 games ago, when you see this, Bo, when you see Lloyd McClendon with the bases loaded, riddle me this, okay? We know that Ackley cannot. He's not really hitting much these days. And with runners in scoring position, he's basically virtually. He's like 1-for-22 with runners in scoring position this season. He's been horrible, okay? Two games ago against the San Diego Padres, this is the scenario. In the bottom of the sixth inning, Kyle Seager and Logan Morrison lead off the inning against James Shields with walks. So there's two on, nobody out. And Mike Zunino, who I'm not going to sit here and say that he's the hottest Mariner right now, but he's definitely been one of the more hotter guys over the last 7 days. He's been pretty decent. Couple home runs, sure. A couple doubles, and in that game he had already doubled once off of Shields. And with one strike, all of a sudden you see Lloyd McClendon asking him to put one down. All of a sudden now he wants a guy who can't bunt. All of a sudden now you're asking a guy who can't bunt to bunt. So you're asking to sacrifice a guy who's literally been hot and has already doubled for once in the game for a guy who literally cannot hit water out of a boat. Now, I don't know if this is a situation where Lloyd McClendon is just running him out here now, basically giving enough rope for him to hang, but there's no way that I can even imagine that you would literally try to sacrifice one of your hottest bats for one of the guys who literally probably won't be on the roster a month from now. To me, it's not just been a little bit of bad luck where the Mariners have been running themselves out of game, but it's also been some questionable decisions where you're kind of like, haven't you been in this game for like 20 years? Haven't you been in this game for like your entire life and been a manager for like the last 20 years or been in coaching for the last 20 years? Like, I don't know. To me, I don't know if it's a manager issue. I don't know if it's not a potential, like not living up to potential issue. To me, I just don't get it. And what's kind of you brought up earlier about this division? You're right. You can't necessarily take for a grain of salt right now in the division because it's only mid-May. But then again, Bo, we're already 6 weeks into the season, 6-7 weeks into the season, and maybe a couple more. You can't use that excuse anymore.
Oh, you can. It's not really an excuse. It's. Truthfully, it's looking at the standings. No one's pulling away. Now, if the Angels decide they want to start pulling away, or if the Mariners start pulling away, or the Rangers start pulling away, then that's when you start to really get a little panicky. But at the moment, no one's pulling away.
Right. Well,
I understand it's 6 weeks in, but still.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, as of right now, the Astros only hold a 4.5 game lead on the division right now over the mighty 17-17 California Angels of Disneyland, and of course the Mariners and the Rangers are trying to jockey for who's best, you know, who's a better third place team, and of course the A's. How about the A's? I think you and I both thought that the A's would be at least, you know, be able to tread water, at least not be this horrible. But this team has been horrible. 13-23, they're bad.
Especially the way that the West has gone this year, I really expected them to at least stay with the pack. Going into June and maybe even July, the way this thing is shaping up, because no one seems to want to take a hold of this division.
Right.
But the A's. But you know what? I think that if you look at the A's, you look at the moves they made. I mean, I said in the offseason, I like them in 2016, 2015. A lot of things have to go right, and none of those things are going right for these. I mean, it's a young team. Once again, we have a young A's team that has to learn out how to win and how to play, and they're not doing it yet. But you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see them have a little bit of a surge in the second half and start to put things together for next year.
Quick note: the Mariners and the Rangers also are two one of the worst hitting teams with runners in scoring position. How about that? The Mariners are actually
that's terrible.
Are actually the worst. As far as that goes, the Rangers aren't really necessarily doing all that well.
No.
Anyway, so let's get to one of our new features here as we approach the halfway point. Bo, it is the Player of the Week conversation, and of course, every single week from here on out, we're going to highlight a player that I think is going to, you know, it's going to be interesting to see exactly what they did in the week and also what we predict is going to happen this upcoming week. And I want to start off with you too, because there's a lot of very good, interesting, things, the ways that you can go with this one. You can also, if you want to stay down in the Lone Star State, there's a guy who literally was virtually invisible for the first 5 weeks, but over the last 7 days, he's been very good. I'm not going to go that way. I'm going to be going a different way on the East Coast, but it's going to be interesting to see which way you go.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, I actually have, I don't know if you know rotogrinders.com, but that's really where I monitor the game. I monitor how hitters are going, who's hot, who's not. And
right.
one player really struck out at me, pun intended, was Jason Kipnis in Cleveland. I went Kipnis because, you know, they moved him to the leadoff spot, and he has really turned it on. He's, in the last 7 days, he's 444.
Right.
No home runs, but he's got an on-base percentage of .533 at the top of that Indians order. How are they not scoring more runs?
A quick note. According to Fangraphs, and you're right, Jason Kipnis has definitely had a great week, but it's spanned 6 days, 30 plate appearances, and he's batting .542 with an OBP of .633. So there you go.
Yeah, well, you've got five more bats on yours than mine.
Right. So, but I mean, you're absolutely right.
He's torn the cover off the ball, and I think you look at the Indians. I mean, tonight, you know, Carlos Santana's hitting second. Why? You know, I'm starting to wonder what's going on at Cleveland, where you have a leadoff guy that's getting on base, 60% of the time, and they're still struggling to score runs. They're still right there with the A's for the worst record in the American League, yet their leadoff guy is getting it done. What's going on with the rest of them? I mean, Brantley's having a good year.
Yeah, he
has. How are they not getting him in?
Well, you know, part of the reason in Cleveland, number one, bullpen really hasn't exactly been all that great. I'm not saying it's been terrible. It hasn't exactly been good. The bottom third of their rotation exactly hasn't been good. But you know what the biggest reason? They're just not scoring runs. It's not an issue of with runners in scoring position. When you see a team that's not hitting with runners in scoring position, basically what it tells you is that they're just not hitting, period. You know what I mean? So, right, Michael Brantley has been fantastic. But again, Jason Kipnis needs to get going. Carlos Santana's had to get going. I mean, you know, you're absolutely right, and it's good. Maybe this is something that Tito needed to do, was just kind of shake up the order a little bit and just try something different. I mean, Jason Kipnis is not a leadoff hitter, but he is, and over the last 7 days, he's done a very good job. So Tito's got to figure out a way to do something. I mean, right now, Cleveland's in last place, 12-21, 9 games below .500 right now. And you got to do something because quickly the Indians are fading fast, and this is a team that was picked to win the World Series. So you're absolutely one of the, you know, Sports Illustrated picked this team to win the World Series. So I understand why they did it, but they haven't exactly got off to the greatest start. So you're right, something's got to shake down in Cleveland, and Jason Kipnis certainly has had a very good week. Bo, I was going to go down the Lone Star way, because you know what? Since you chew, 7 games this week, 32 plate appearances, 2 home runs, 4 RBIs, 3 runs scored. He's got a BABIP, batting average with balls in plays, of .632. He's got an OBP of .531, and he's slugging .759. He's got a WRC plus, by the way, of .257, which is phenomenal. Right, I mean, he's had a very good week. Sin Choo Choo has had a very good week. I was going to go there, mm-hmm. and then I was thinking about maybe going with Brian Dozier, who's had a pretty good week. But I don't think I didn't feel comfortable with going with a Minnesota Twin. I didn't think that was going to shake out well for the show. I will give him honorable mention, but I can't go with a Minnesota Twin. I'm going to go with the obvious, who's had an absolutely monster week this year, and of course that's Bryce Harper. 7 games, mm-hmm. 31 plate appearances, 4 home runs, 11 RBI on the week, 9 runs scored, and oh yeah, by the way, 2 stolen bases to boot. He's got a batting average of balls in play of .412, an OBP of .581, a slugging percentage of .183, and of course a WRC plus of .327. This week by himself, he was worth one win. He was wins above replacement. He was worth one. No other player this week. Kipnis came close. He was a .09. He was pretty damn good for the Tribe, but I don't think anybody had a week quite like Bryce Harper.
He certainly had the long ball, and what I found interesting is he gets ejected, gives the guy that replaces him a pat on the shoulder on his way out, and the guy hits a grand slam. I mean, I don't know what's going on there.
Right. Other honorable mentions: Dexter Fowler had a good week for the Cubs. 2 home runs, 3 RBIs. He certainly had a very good week this week. Freddie Galvis of the Philadelphia Phillies, 29 plate appearances, no home runs, only one RBI, three stolen bases, but he had an on-base percentage of .517. So he was certainly doing his thing. Of course, Corey Spangenberg of the Padres, if you ever heard of Corey Spangenberg before, two home runs, three RBIs, three stolen bases. He's been tearing the cover off the ball. Even Torii Hunter, again, had a very good week. Three home runs, seven RBIs, but again, we can't go with a twin. I think there's a no twins rule in effect for this show, okay? I specifically, before the show started, I sent out an inner office mail that said no twins.
See, I did not get that memo.
Okay. So he was like, you know what? I'm going twins. Damn it, no. So
no, I'm not.
A lot of good players this week, but definitely I think Bryce Harper had the week of the week. Although it wasn't bad to go with Jason Kipnis. Jason Kipnis had a pretty decent week himself too. You'd like to see a little bit more RBIs. If you're not necessarily going to go yard, which is fine. I sometimes think home runs are a little overrated, but then again, I don't think RBIs are overrated. And if you're Jason Kipnis, that's fine. I don't care if it's a single. I don't care if it's a double. But, you know, put yourself in a position, you know, to drive in some runs. But then again, he was the leadoff hitter, and you're not really going to have a lot of opportunities to drive in runs. So you got to make them count when you do.
Sure.
So there is – what? Say that again?
I just said sure. You're right.
Yeah. So, Bo, let's go to the next line of business, and that is putting – a man in the box. Not necessarily a man. It could be many men. It could be a team. It can be a division. It could be whatever you want it to be. It can be anything that's on your chest, something that you think that somebody's playing hot. Maybe it's somebody that's not, or somebody that you feel that is about to turn the corner, something that you feel is going to give, or maybe it's a good thing. It's whatever you want it to be. It is your weekly spotlight. The floor is yours, my friend. Who are you putting in the box?
Chris Bryant, Chicago Cubs.
Ooh, you're putting Bryant in the box, huh?
Bryant's in the box. You know, he made a lot of waves, him and his agent, for griping about being sent down until the new year kicks in, so to speak, for prospects in terms of their free agent clock. They didn't appreciate that move. And what has he done since he came up here? Exactly what he should have done from the beginning. Let his bat do the talking. Three home runs this week alone from Mr. Chris Bryant. An on-base percentage of .355. You'd like to see that batting average get a little higher, but for a rookie in his first campaign, and after everything he's gone through the last month, I'm sure the Cubs will take it.
You know, what's interesting about Chris Bryant, and I'm glad that you brought him up, it's kind of funny because you actually threw a curveball at me because you didn't say you were going to go to the north side at all. You were actually thinking about going down to your own state of Texas because, you know, there's a couple of intriguing things going on down there. And so I was figuring, okay, Rangers as usual. It's something Rangers-centric with Bo. Okay, fine, cool. Here's your platform to gush, and you do gush. Whether it's the Cowboys or the Rangers, you gush. And you went Chris Bryant, and I'm glad that you did that. Interesting side note, though. Outside of the batting average, and I get it, but .286 is not a bad batting average at all. Especially for a week, it's not a bad batting average. But I look at batting average with balls in play, which is specifically in between the lines. He's got a batting average of ball in play at .357. So it's kind of funny, but you're right. I get it, but when you look at the OBP, you look at the slugging, you look at the OPS. He is absolutely dynamite. You look at his ISO, which is isolated power, .393. Mm-hmm. The dude has had a huge week. Huge week.
Yeah. Huge week. And this is what he should have done from the beginning. Let his bat do the talking for him. You know, go down to AAA, tear it up, wait it out, wait for you to get to the point where you're not going to start your free agent clock till the year after. That's what the team was going to do all along. We all knew that. And then he got to come up here and show that you really did belong in this league, and he does. And I don't think I'm certainly not surprised at the way he's been able to handle himself, the way he's been able to play at this level. He was ready. We saw that in spring training. Now he gets to do it.
You know who I feel bad for? Your boy, your old boy that you said under no circumstances should the Rangers trade him, and they ended up trading him anyway. Michael.
Yeah.
I feel bad for Michael because really,
yeah.
he has not had an opportunity to perform, and now they bring up Chris Bryant, and he's never going to have an opportunity to perform, and it sucks he's going to end up being lost in the sauce because of it.
Yeah, he will, but, he is a valuable trade piece, maybe, at the deadline. They should do the right thing for Mike Alton and ship him somewhere where he can get regular playing time and establish himself in this league. I'm a little surprised he struggled the way he has. The way he was coming up the Rangers farm system, he looked like a dead ringer, and, now he's not. And he's not going to get regular playing time now, not now that Chris Bryant is basically already, after just a few weeks, established himself as the third baseman.
And you got Mike Rizzo, Anthony Rizzo, on the other side of the infield. There's really no spot for him to play it unless they want to make him into a corner outfielder, which, I think at this point you're absolutely right. I think maybe, just maybe, and again, I hate to use this, the dreaded change of scenery that I eloquently ran it on at the beginning of the season. It's kind of funny. You're absolutely right. He seems to be like the throw-in piece, you know what I mean? It's going to end up being the throw-in piece. But I don't know how I'm going to top Chris Bryant. That was a very good, I'll try.
You've got Sandgrass right in front of you. Let's go.
I'm going to put the entire Colorado Rockies in the box.
The entire team, huh?
The entire team. This is an absolute – I could easily make a case for the Brewers or the Philadelphia Phillies, but that's too easy.
Mm-hmm.
But the Colorado Rockies are a disgrace to the National League West. You can understand Arizona – they brought in Dave Stewart. They got a new leadership change in the front office. So, they're going to try to rebuild with the system that they have. Okay, that's understandable. They blew it up. They're kind of moving in a different direction. They're okay. They're not great. The record reflects it. Okay, fine. The Colorado Rockies are completely and utterly clueless. Okay.
Oh yeah.
This is a directionless franchise. That doesn't have a they have no idea which direction they want to go in. They have movable pieces that they literally could blow up and literally try to get better. They have nice little pieces. Nolan Arenado, I like him. Corey Dickerson is okay. He's not great. But then you have retread, Justin Morneau, retread, Drew Stubbs, retread, Nick Hundley, Charlie Blackman.
One very big piece.
You have Tulowitzki. You have Carlos Gonzalez.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
You can move those two pieces right then and there, and you can figure out a way. Because let's be perfectly honest, Bo, it's Colorado, and you're not going to get a lot of pitchers that are going to want to come to Colorado because it is literally a place where pitchers go to die. So the only way you can either be successful in Colorado is to A, draft them, or B, move off players to get young players at the big league level. And you know what? Okay, whatever, they're going to take off. You can control them for 6 years, and they're going to end up taking off, but whatever. But for the better part of 6 years, they will be in your organization. And if they're good enough, they'll get up to the major league level, whatever. And at that point where they're not going to come back, and that's when you flip them and you restart the process over again. It's what Billy Bean has been able to do forever, and it seems like the cycles are good for the Oakland A's. They figure out a way to make it happen. But yet, for whatever reason, every single year, this team seems to be a laughing stock year in, year out, and there really is no end of this vicious cycle. To me, this is a joke of a baseball team. They can't pitch, they don't have a bullpen, and they really can't hit. They don't have anybody that really excites you to go out to the game. I'm sorry, Troy Tulowitzki does not excite me anymore. He doesn't excite me. Carlos Gonzalez does not. Justin Morneau hasn't excited me since he was a Minnesota Twin. And again, I understand it was a Twins band. We can't talk.
He really hasn't been the same since his concussion issues.
Right.
He just has not been the same player. He at one time, he was one heck of a power hitter. And now he's a shell of his former self. But you're absolutely right in terms of the Rockies. There is no direction there. None whatsoever. When you're signing retreads,
Because
you have no choice, because you've been drafting so bad, you've been trading so bad, your franchise player is off to a pedestrian start, and I'm being nice.
Right.
You know, it's a bad situation, and everyone was like, you know, loved to talk about how, you know, Tulowitzki could have demanded a trade, but he didn't. You know why he didn't? I bet you do. I bet you know why he didn't, because right now they have very little leverage talking to teams about Tulowitzki as it is. He throws in a trade demand on top of that, you're not going to get anything for him.
Well, no, and right, exactly, and I think at this point in time, I mean, he's not Ken Griffey Jr. after the '99 season, where he's still fantastic, and you can sit there and try to force your way out of town. You're absolutely right. He would literally have no leverage by doing so. So,
and neither would the Rock.
Last week we talked about the Brewers and the Phillies being one of those two teams to kind of get ahead of the market. Well, the Rockies should easily be one of those teams to get ahead of the market, because there are teams out there that would froth at the mouth for an opportunity to get Carlos Gonzalez, or maybe even try to pry away a Troy Tulowitzki. It would be so beneficial again, because you might be able to get a nice little haul from at this stage. If you're a team like the Yankees, and I want to caution by saying, okay, well, wait a second, you know, but at the, you know, the Yankees, but then again, the Yankees have some nice pieces on their 25-man roster that actually would work. And I'm never one of those type of guys that wants to mess with your 25-man roster this early in the season, but it's still early enough where you can juggle some things out. Where, and again, I know that Didi Gregorius, I think he might, I don't, I'm not 100% sure, I got to check into this real quick, and I will, but I think he might have, I don't think he was he sent down this week? I think, I really want to say that, but let me check this out real quick.
I want to say yes, but I'm with you, I'm not totally sure on that.
Well, here's the deal, like a team like the Yankees, who right now, who are playing above what a lot of people expected right now, and are currently sitting in first place, I think, what, one game clear of the Tampa Bay Rays, and Tampa Bay is playing incredibly well right now. But
right.
To get a guy like Troy Tulowitzki, and Didi Gregorius is right there, he's still up. But you can possibly figure out a way where maybe, you might be able to get, and I know this sounds kind of crazy, but maybe a Didi Gregorius, maybe you might even take whatever's left on Carlos Beltran's contract. I think it's like one more year. I think it was a 3-year deal. So you got Beltran for one more year, which gives you a little bit better option at first base, or even in right field in Colorado, which would probably benefit Carlos Beltran maybe, or maybe you turn around and say, hey, listen, maybe we want Nathan Eovaldi. Maybe we want Adam Warren. Maybe we want a starting pitcher off your, a starting pitcher off your 25-man roster, and maybe Didi Gregorius. I'm just throwing this out there. I don't necessarily like to tinker with a 25-man roster, but it's Troy Tulowitzki. You can find a way to get Troy Tulowitzki
right
in New York. Right now, I'm unsure about their prospect list right now. Doing a quick scan. Of their prospect list, you're looking at their highest prospect that's close to their number one prospect is in Double A right now, and it's Luis Cerevino. So yeah, probably they probably want Cerevino. Maybe Aaron Judge, who's in Double A, he's the right fielder. That's their number one and number two prospects in that organization. Maybe, and you might be able to pull somebody off their. But you get what I'm saying. Maybe it would be beneficial. Mm-hmm. For the Colorado Rockies to blow this. I mean, that's the whole thing. It sucks because by doing it now, you're basically saying this season is over, and it's a bad thing to do for your fan base. But then again, if you can get, for Troy Tulowitzki right now, a number one, a number two, and maybe two players off a 25-man roster, a four-player swing for one guy who really doesn't want to be there, you would probably think
right.
that would benefit the Colorado Rockies, and then you can do it again with Carlos Gonzalez. Maybe you might not get the same haul as you would with Tulowitzki, but you might be able to get three, and you might be able to pry off a top prospect and maybe somebody off the 25-man roster.
Yeah, you look at the Rockies. You know, I think that they're kind of at that tip. They're at that tipping point, Steve, where they're Houston about 6 years ago. You know, Houston held on to guys they shouldn't have. They didn't start the rebuild. You know, they ended up having to, you know, eventually blow it up. And when they blew it up, it was players retiring or signing with other teams when the contract expired. They never got anything of value for guys like Biggio or Berkman. They never got players for those guys. So, and that really put them in the Hurt Locker for a few years. Colorado is dangerously close to making that exact same mistake. And at least Astros fans had a competent front office that knew how to, when they took over after that mess, knew how to jumpstart things using the draft.
Right.
I don't think you can say that about Colorado and their front office.
You can't. Colorado has fallen off a cliff. Philadelphia has fallen off a cliff. Milwaukee is just different. I mean, maybe Milwaukee's fallen off a cliff to some extent because they put a lot of baggage on the shoulders of guys like Ryan Braun and Aramis Ramirez and guys like that, where really it's, you know, maybe it was a little foolish for a small market club like Milwaukee to do it, but then again, you understand why they did it. Maybe they've fallen off a cliff as well too. But I think unless you get a baseball guy in there, a very good baseball guy that understands, I don't want to say player development because it can't be just player development. I don't think you can put all your eggs in the player development basket, but understands the trends of how to build a team, understands the wherewithal where, you know what, you're not, you know, being able to calculate, being calculative to understand when it's okay to make a trade or not being afraid to make a trade because you're afraid of what it might do to your fan base because you're so worried about ticket sales, where, you know, you have to hold on to it even though it might not be what's best for the winning culture of the club. And I just don't think Colorado's their track record has shown they're not really all that savvy as far as that goes. And you're absolutely right, they haven't drafted well. Their drafts really have not been all that great. And, of course, the trades have actually been very bad. And it's just you're trying to get somebody in there that can actually just, you know, be a healthy body as far as being somebody that could actually help you win. Their trades have been downright, shall I say, piss poor.
Yeah, they've been awful. And I think, you know, you're really getting a double whammy as a Rockies fan at this point because, one, they've shown they're incompetent in the draft. They're incompetent in terms of filling out their roster. But they've also been incompetent in terms of trades, which is what their function now is. There's not a lot of hope in Colorado for these Rockies. And, you know, I'd never like to say, hey, you need a completely clean house in the front office to start over. But the Rockies really need to do that at this point.
Their offseason was Nick Hundley, who is more or less a backup catcher, but now he's starting, who you saw last year in Baltimore. Daniel Descalo, who is a pretty decent utility infielder. He's filling that role. He's okay. Kyle Kendrick, who is basically more or less a number four or a number five, but in Colorado he's a number two. And John Axford, who basically has been run out of two different cities because, well, he's John Axford, and he's only good for like a year, maybe two, and then he falls off the face of the earth and has to reinvent himself somewhere else. But outside of that, that was their offseason. They got Jordan Lyles in a trade, and Jordan Lyles was with Houston, as a matter of fact. It's funny that you brought him up. He was okay in Houston. Mm-hmm. Wasn't great, wasn't terrible, but he certainly is Jordan Lyles. He was young, 24, so you still think there's some upside. They got Rafael Betancourt, who's okay in a deal, but for the most part, you're right. I mean, trades, you know what I mean? Their trades have been, and for the most part, most of their roster is basically draft. I mean, it's, Christian Bergman, Kenny Rogers, Scott Olberg, Christian Fetterich were all drafted. Same thing with what, Eddie Butler, Chad Bettis. You're like, these guys are, some of these guys that were coming up that were expected to be in the rotation weren't good enough to be in the rotation, and now all of a sudden they're in the bullpen. So you're absolutely right. I mean, player development, you thought these guys were going to pan out, and they're bullpen pieces.
Yeah, I mean, and that's it. That's what's going on in Colorado right now, and there are three phases that a front office goes through, right? You know, you have the draft, you have trades, you have four. Player development is three, you know, and you've got filling out your roster. Okay? That's what you've got to do. And they mark them down for Fs across the board. I don't understand how any of them still have jobs.
No, I feel you. To me, it's,
you know, we talk about phases of the game of players, you know, he's a great hitter, but his fielding is terrible, or vice versa, or you get the five-tool guys. You talk about the phases of the game as a player. There's phases of the game as a front office. And right now, these guys are, you know what, I'm going to piggyback off your rant from earlier. They are the Dustin Ackley of front offices right now.
Ooh.
They see a fastball. They see a fastball they can hit. What do? They take it.
Oh, that's mean. Don't disrespect Dustin Ackley with the call. That's funny. Turning our attention to the out-of-town scoreboard, Bill, the Philadelphia Phillies currently lead the Arizona Diamondbacks 1-0, but the Diamondbacks right now with one out have two on. Mark Trumbo is at the plate against Dave Frates. As a matter of fact, Mark Trumbo actually just struck out swinging, so he is not up.
A barn burner of a series. Talking about a battle of the suck.
Ooh,
ouch.
15-8 versus 13-23. The Los Angeles Angels of Disneyland currently hold a 2-1 lead over your Baltimore Orioles right now. Tommy Hunter is on the hill for the Baltimore Orioles, and up bat is Johnny Giavitella with runners on the corners. So there's that in a 1-0 count, so we'll keep you updated on that. The Atlanta Braves are taking on the Miami former Florida Marlins. Julio Teheran is on the hill for the Braves, and Andy Hechevarria just grounded out to third baseman Phil Gosselin. The Milwaukee Brewers are currently up 7-0 over the New York Mets. That is in the top of the ninth. Gil Martin is on the hill for the Mets, and Candy Maldonado, I'm just playing. Yeah, Candy Maldonado is at bat for the Milwaukee Brewers. So that thing is almost complete. In Cincinnati, the Giants lead 8-2 over the Reds. Lorenzen is on the hill for the Cincinnati Reds, and Brandon Crawford is at bat with a runner on second base and a 1-1 count in a 6-run lead for the San Francisco Giants. The Cleveland Indians are trailing 3-2 to your Texas Rangers. Wandy Rodriguez is on the hill for the Rangers, and Nick Swisher currently actually just hit a double on a line drive to the right center field, so there is a pulse with Nick Swisher, so keep your eye on that. Bottom of the fourth, Kansas City leads the New York Yankees 2-1. Michael Pineda is on the hill for the former Mariner. Michael Pineda is on the hill, and he just got former Mariner Kendrys Morales to ground out to the second baseman Stephen Drew, so there's that. That game is obviously, I think I said, in the bottom of the fourth. Also in the fourth, Minnesota and Tampa Bay are tied 1-1. Jake Odorizzi is on the hill for the Tampa Bay Rays, and Edwin Escobar is at bat right now for the Minnesota Twins. Houston leads Toronto 4-1. R.A. Dickey is on the hill for the Blue Jays, and Jose Altuve is at bat right now with two on and one out right here. So that probably score will change in just a second, probably to 5-1. Detroit is up on St. Louis, 1-0 in St. Louis. In the top of the fourth inning, Carlos Martinez on the hill for the Redbirds, and Julio Iglesias, I like being funny, just walked, and now and that pushes McCann to second base. So Brian Austin Green will be up for the Tigers. Tonight's game, the Oakland A's and the Chicago White Sox live from Oakland. Carlos Rondon versus Jesse Hahn. Boston and Seattle. Buchholz versus Jay Happ. Colorado is in Los Angeles last night. They snapped an 11-game losing streak. They'll send Butler to the hill tonight against Clayton Kershaw, so that should be a very good game. Washington is in San Diego. Jordan Zimmerman takes on Daniel Despain. It's gone final, in 12. Chicago has beaten the Pirates 11-10. 11 runs on 15 hits for the Cubs, 10 runs on 15 hits for the Pirates in one error. Edwin Jackson picks up the win. Homering in that game was Pedro Alvarez, Andrew McCutchen, and Jay Harrison for the Buccos, and Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo for the Chicago Cubs. So a lot of action so far in the major leagues on the major league docket tonight. Nothing really fantastic standing out except for the Cleveland Indians have now just tied your Texas Rangers Zach Walters, single day line drive to left field, scoring Nick Swisher. So there's that. So there's the update. Ha! How about that? Eat that one. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, buddy. They just tied.
Yeah.
Off Wandy.
The fourth inning. And the Rangers are already into the Indians' bullpen.
So what?
They're already into the Indians' bullpen, which we talked about earlier as having a little bit of a rough start to their year. So I'm not exactly worried.
Yeah. It's, you know, yeah, I know. I'm just not giving you any credit. That's all. You know, I'm not going to give it any credit. It's Wandy Rodriguez. You know, no big whoop. So,
He was due for a bad start, and this is actually not that bad of a start, but for him it's a bad start.
I don't know. I can't get behind Wandy Rodriguez. I mean, this is a guy who pretty much, for the most part, you know, had a decent 2-3 year stretch in Houston, and pretty much since then has been blah. He's basically been, you know, he hasn't been great. He hasn't been terrible, but he certainly hasn't been exactly what he's been built to. And, of course, the Rangers bringing him in because they basically need a pulse that can throw on the hill just because of so many injuries. And so Wandy's been okay. I wouldn't say he's been great, but he certainly hasn't been as bad as I thought he was going to be. That was a nice little pickup, Bo. I'll give John Daniels credit for Wandy Rodriguez because it was a nice pickup that virtually cost anything. So if you get anything out of him, obviously it was well worth the time and effort. So I'll give JD a little tip of the cap. I'll give him an attaboy for Wandy.
Okay.
That's it. You're just going to give me an okay? No soliloquy? No nothing?
No. Let's give you an okay on that.
Updated wild card standings.
He did set a club record with 34 straight batters sat down, so there's that.
I know. It was kind of funny. When I heard that, I did the double take, and I was like, what? What? Are we talking about the same Wandy Rodriguez? Are we still talking about the same guy that was basically pushed out of two different cities, and all of a sudden he goes to a park where he should have not success at all and had success?
Well, I think it's also worth noting. It's worth noting those two starts were on the road.
That's true. That's very true. That's very true. So that was kind of funny. So surprises, Bo. Surprises. Anything that's jumped out at you at this point in the season? Now it's May 15th, so we are now. Let's see, 30. Pushing 40 games now. We're basically at 36 games pushing 40. Is there anything that has really just caught you by surprise?
Yeah, I think you have to look at the Central and look at the East in the American League. I think we're seeing a lot better performances than we thought we would see. You know, look at the Yankees. You know, A-Rod Teixeira are off to decent starts. The Tigers are off to a good start. Those are two teams that I had pegged for, at best, third place. In their inner respective divisions, you got the Indians at the bottom of the American League Central when we all thought they would be at the top. I mean, the American League East and the American League Central have both been huge surprises for me this year.
What's interesting about it, and I think I tend to agree with you, the two teams that we actually picked to win that division, the Chicago White Sox and also the Cleveland Indians, have not really got off to good starts. Now, the White Sox certainly have kind of turned things around a little bit, pulling to within 3 games of 500 after being, as far as 7 games below 500 at one point. So they've kind of dug themselves a little bit out of that hole.
Mm-hmm.
But Cleveland has just been a mess. Cleveland has been, a complete mess.
An absolute mess.
And what's interesting is we said it early in the show, if they cannot get their you-know-what together, this thing is going to fade fast. But what's interesting about the American League East is I'm not so surprised by the Yankees. And I think we said it before the season started that it can go one of two ways. It can go really good or it can go really bad. There's not going to be an in-between with the New York Yankees. They're not going to sit there and just trudge around 500 all season and, you know, be mediocre. They're going to be very good or they're going to be very bad. And so far they've been okay. Michael Pineda has been good. They've gotten a lot of – I mean, I think A-Rod has been, to me, the biggest surprise just considering all the baggage that came into it. And of course, I think you wanted to dig a little bit into it. And we got about, I want to say, 6 minutes left in the program here, so we definitely have enough time to get into it if you want to, Bo. I'm not surprised that the Yankees got out to the way they were, because I thought for the most part, relatively healthy, and yeah, Tanaka did go down, but for the most part, they've been able to keep it, you know, keep the glue stuck to the wall without it coming completely unraveled. And they're getting some very good performances. They're not getting great performances, but they're getting decent enough performances where they can score enough runs. And the bullpen, the bullpen has been their shining.
It's been fantastic.
It's been their bright spot. So they've been able to get leads, yeah. And they've been able to stay, keep them. They've been able to hold them, which is why they've been able to do it. I don't know if the Yankees are going to be able to keep it up, but right now I can't say it's a big surprise to me. The Red Sox and maybe even the Orioles are a little bit bigger and surprise to me than the Yankees.
Yeah, I can see that. But the Yankees. I don't think any of us could have expected this out of their bullpen. I think their bullpen. We talked about Baltimore a couple years ago. The bullpen was a story. I think the bullpen's a story with the Yankees.
Yeah.
You're talking about rotation that Tanaka's gone down. It's not the best rotation yet. They're still winning ball games, and they're doing it because their offense is getting them an early lead,
yep.
And that bullpen is not relinquishing it. That's how they're winning, and that's how Baltimore went to the playoffs a couple years ago. It's how they made it to the ALCS last year. It's the same formula. It's just the Yankees doing it this time instead of Baltimore.
Right. And the thing about it is, and, you know, you mentioned that bullpen. Yeah. I mean, they got some, you know, Andrew Miller has been fantastic this year. Andrew Miller has
Lights
been
out.
Very good. Dellin Betances, that back end has been pretty good. I really like this bullpen. I mean, Chris Martin, Justin Wilson, Chasen Shreve, Chase Whitley. These guys can throw, man. David Carpenter, these guys can throw. And they have, and it's given Joe Girardi some options. And what's kind of funny is we saw this last season in Kansas City. We saw exactly what a good bullpen can do for you. I'm not saying this is going to
yeah.
be a team that's going to win the World Series. I think the Yankees are about three arms in their rotation away from being a legitimate,
right.
All apologies to CeCe Sabathia, dude, your time is come and gone. They're literally
oh, yeah.
about three arms away. If Tanaka can come back and he can stay healthy, him and Pineda are going to be fantastic, but they're going to need at least three more arms to close this deal. Cause I think one of the things that will help them is A-Rod. The fact that A-Rod was out last year and has one less season of wear and tear, I think that's going to keep him moderately fresh. And he's a DH. I think that's going to help. I think that's going to help the Yankees
mm-hmm.
a lot, but I don't
sure.
think it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be an issue of the offense, and I don't think it's going to be the issue of the bullpen. I think the Yankees are either going to make it or break it with that starting rotation. Right now, they've been able to hold it together, but I think there's a big old void from spots 3 for 5.
Yeah, there's a huge void. For the Yankees to actually make that push, they're going to have to make some trades, and they know that. And the good news for the Yankees, though, is their farm system is better than it was a few years ago. They're in position to actually make a big deal. I don't think they're necessarily going to be able to have the firepower for, say, a Cole Hamels, mainly because Amaro
right.
Jr. is still in the stratosphere high on acid, thinking he's going to get that for Cole Hamels. Okay, I mean, let's just be honest about that.
He is in the stratosphere.
High on acid.
High on acid in the stratosphere. So, A-Rod, 250 average,
yeah.
not really A-Rod-like. But he's got an OBP of 355. His BABIP, batting average balls in play, but, 9 home runs, 21 RBIs. Are you surprised,
mm-hmm.
A-Rod?
Not really. I expected him to be a little bit more rusty than he was. I don't really care about the baggage coming into the season. I mean, I think if you look at interviews that he's done, the stories that came out as we were approaching spring training, you could see that he had turned the page and he just wanted to play baseball.
Right.
So I was concerned about being rusty because you're talking about a player that hadn't played a year and a half at all. And, I mean, you take any time away from the game, it's hard to get that swing back to what it was. But he's certainly done that. He had the surgery was on his hip that was essentially an experimental surgery to try and extend his career. That has been a success at this point.
How awkward was that when he passed Willie Mays? I mean, that was a milestone event as far as I'm concerned. And you know how I feel about steroids and how I feel about steroid use. And I don't think if you take steroids, it makes you the worst person in the world. I just think it means you just have questionable judgment. But I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I mean, people have known to do what they feel is in the best, whatever. I'm not going to get into it. But
yeah,
it was a milestone event to me. And
I felt
bad for A-Rod because it was awkward. It was awkward for him. And he did it at, you know, he did it in Boston and he passed Willie Mays at Yankee Stadium. And it was, they were trying to downplay it. The Yankees were like, great. Let's move on to the next guy.
Yeah
I felt bad for him. I felt awkward for him. But it was still deserved. I mean, what's kind of funny is he still hit those home runs. He still hit them.
Yeah.
He still hit them.
He did.
He was deserving of at least a standing ovation.
He was. He absolutely was. And what I'm wondering, you didn't see the fanfare in New York because how could the Yankees, you know, do the fanfare when they're trying to get out of paying in the $6 million bonus they owe him for passing Willie Mays? I'm curious to see if they're able to actually accomplish that. I don't see how they can.
No, because it's in the contract. It's in the contract.
It's in the contract.
I know that there was no provisions written into it. I know that there's like a I wouldn't say it's an exempt clause written in, because I think I read something about an exempt clause, but it doesn't have anything to do with PEDs or performing, you know, PEDs or anything like that. It's kind of funny is they're gonna just say they're not gonna pay him, and what's kind of funny is there's a legal binding agreement in his contract that says, you know what, you have to pay him. But if I was A-Rod. If I was A-Rod with that money, already making that type of money, and granted, it's owed to him because he still hit it. But this would be a very good opportunity for A-Rod to use that money towards goodwill and charity. Don't you think that would be nice?
Yeah.
Don't you think that would be nice? An olive branch?
That would be as nice as a bunch of stuffed little fluffy puppies. You know,
that would
that's incredibly nice.
Rolled fluffy puppies.
Yeah.
Say fluffy puppies 8 times fast. Well, Bo, fluffy puppies.
It'd be nice.
So,
but they got to pay him first.
Well, Bo, that's gonna do it for this week. This week in baseball, I don't have the music. Maybe next week we'll have the music. But that'll take care of this week's show. Next week we will dive back into our players of the week. We'll put another person or team in the box. We'll recap news and notes, give you all the updated scores. Bo, my friend, take us out.
Go, Wandy.
Oh, XOXO.